the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host.
More and more headlines are coming out pointing to signs of weakness in the housing market. Are we looking at a temporary slowdown or something more serious? Joining us on the show today is Kathy Fetke at Real Wealth Network. And Kathy, given that you are an active real estate investor, I know you yourself have properties, you're actively in the market, and you also have a number of clients that you work with. You even have speaking events that you do on housing. What are your thoughts on the outlook for housing? Are we looking at just a temporary slowdown, or do you think that this is something that could be more longer lasting?
It all depends on what the Federal Reserve is planning. So when the Federal Reserve raises rates, there's one intention, and that is to slow down a booming market. And we know for sure that both real estate and stocks have been booming for about a decade. And the reason it's been booming is really simple. It's the actions of the Federal Reserve. And too many people don't talk about it or look at it. But what jump-started the housing market after it flatlined basically in 2008 was quantitative easing. Just the Federal Reserve is creating a whole bunch of money, putting it in the banks for reserves, but also companies could borrow for very inexpensively. And that, of course, drove the stock market up. But then in addition, the Fed bought bonds. And when there's no market for bonds, then interest rates go up for long-term, for mortgage-type loans. But when there's a buyer for bonds, then interest rates go down. And that's what the Fed did. They had a very aggressive, unprecedented bond buying program to jumpstart the housing market. And you know what? It worked. When you've got the Federal Reserve basically creating $4.5 trillion or more out of thin air to jumpstart an economy, it better work. And it did. And so now the Fed is saying, oh boy, okay, prices are up, past affordability, the stock market, you know, it's looking pretty peaky there. So they are trying to slow it down, but slow it down gradually and not basically pop any bubbles. Now, in the past, they haven't necessarily been successful at it. Usually when the Fed raises rates, in most cases, I think there's only been a few exceptions, there was a recession afterwards. So, you know, the bottom line is that we need to see, you know, we need a slowdown in housing. So it's good for the market. It's good for buyers if it's more affordable. Everybody talks about, oh my gosh, housing's so not affordable. Well, there's one way to change that and make it more affordable. So that's what's happening. But I'm not too worried about it, though, at this point.
Okay. If you think about what we saw in the 2005 housing bubble, I mean, at the time, I remember Ben Bernanke denying that there was a housing bubble and really just saying, don't worry about it. We've never seen a nationwide decline in housing prices. And it seems like from the comments that I'm hearing from the Fed this time around, and again, you said, you know, a lot of it depends on what we see with the Fed on how fast they tighten. Jay Powell and other Fed presidents are paying attention to what's going on with the temporary weakness that we've seen. So instead of denying that there's a problem, instead they're now saying, hey, it does look like we're seeing some signs of softening with new home sales. And so they're mindful of that. So it seems like the mindset is quite a bit different now when we think about comparing 2005 to today.
Yeah, I mean, it is shocking that that so many people didn't see the problem a decade ago. I mean, it was pretty obvious if you looked. If you're
right.
If you're giving out loans to people who can't pay them back, there's probably going to be a problem when it comes time to pay back. Now, fast forward 10 years, and here we are today, knowing that that the Federal Reserve is trying to create a slowdown, and that could turn into a recession. But would it be a massive, dramatic crash? Or would it just be a slowdown? You know, they're trying to create a slowdown. And so how would that affect the housing market? Well, what we know is that indeed it's working and existing home sales were lower, new home sales were lower, but you know what wasn't lower? Prices, they're still increasing. So you know, again, it's just slowing it down and their intention is to do it gracefully. And the difference today is that most people who own a home today, most, have a fair amount of equity and a very low payment. Many, many people who bought homes in the last decade, in the last 10 years, bought for much cheaper and for very low interest rates. I mean, there's people who bought in 2010, 11, 12, who maybe got 2% interest rates and their houses maybe doubled in value. So, you know, it's not like they're going to just you know, stop making their payments and walk away from their home if they lose their job. It's not like that. They'll never find a cheaper place to live than where they're at right now. I really don't think we're going to see any kind of foreclosure crisis, but we will probably see a little bit more inventory come on the market, and that's a good thing. And it may become a little bit less daunting for a new buyer, because now if you go in and try to make an offer, you're going to have 20 other offers. It's tough if there's a good house at a good price. So maybe it'll soften a bit for new buyers.
Yeah, going back to what you're saying about just the level of demand and the number of offers on homes these days, we purchased our home in 2009, and I remember there were 10, 20 different offers on the homes that we were looking at. I mean, it was nearly impossible to get in the market unless you were an all-cash buyer, because, I mean, you had so many of these commercial investors coming in and just grabbing so many properties with, you know, all-cash offers, and the banks just wanted to get it off their books. If you were borrowing, or if you just had that, you know, that down payment, they're like, nope, that's not enough. We want cash. We want to get it off. And that's what happened. I mean, a lot of those houses that were bought were flipped over. They were sold multiple times from bank to bank to bank. So, yeah, I do want to say, you know, going back to what you said, big picture, it doesn't look like we're looking at the same magnitude of imbalances that we saw in 2005. We're nowhere close to that. So a softening correction in housing prices would definitely be good, especially for those first-time homebuyers, those who are trying to get in the market, because they're definitely priced out. Affordability is a concern. You know, I want to go to what we see in your neck of the woods, where we're located as well in San Diego. Because I think that there have been a number of headlines that have been concentrated just in terms of the weakness that we see in Southern California. So, that, I mean, we can talk about San Diego, we can talk about LA, and even going up a little bit further north to San Francisco area as well, where we know home prices are just astronomical. What are some of the trends that you're seeing in that segment of the market?
Well, you know, if you have a property listed that is somewhat affordable, I mean, nothing's affordable in California, but if it is within the median price range where the average person could possibly afford it, that property is going to be gone. It's sold like hotcakes, unless there's a real problem with it. And even so, you've got a lot of flippers jumping in the market who might like problem properties. So if you're anywhere in the affordable range, you will sell your property. It's the higher end that's slowing down. And you know, why is that? There's a whole lot of reasons why that might be. One big one is that Chinese buyers have traditionally loved Southern California and California in general for as a safe place to put their money. And in last year, the year before, the Chinese government really cracked down on that. They want investment dollars in their own country. And the current administration is not helping warm those waters at all. So basically, it's frowned upon to invest in U.S. property right now by the Chinese government. And from what I understand, you don't really want to upset your government if you live in China. So
no.
That's a big pullback that will affect, you know, the Southern California prices. So it's really, and then builders have been trying to get back up and running, but they simply cannot build affordable housing. And affordable, I mean, you know, I'm not saying it would be expensive by any other standards, but affordable by California standards would be even just something in the $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000 range. They can't do it. When we, Real Wealth Network, we raise money for builders, and our investors make a nice return basically partnering with builders. And the builders that we work with will not build in California anymore. One deal, we were just basically buying land and entitling it and selling it to national builders so that they could take the risk. We found out it cost them over $150,000 just like in school fees and permits. And I mean, that's not even including the rise in material costs and labor costs and the tariffs and the longer permitting time, the holding costs. I mean, they just can't build affordable housing in California unless something gives. And that, you know, it doesn't look like anything's going to give anytime soon environmentally or permit-wise or regulation-wise. So you've got builders who can only build higher end if they want to make a profit. So there's more higher end properties on the market. And whenever there's more properties, then, you know, you start to see a softening, but not in the affordable. If there's anything affordable, let me tell you, it's going to sell immediately.
Yeah. So in that case, I mean, it sounds like that lack of supply, because we really need to see an increasing amount of inventories coming on to see that softening continue. So if we're not seeing that supply come on board, like you just mentioned, from builders just unwilling to build at all in California, except on the high end, then we should expect homes on the lower end and the mid-range to probably stay somewhat supported, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I speak at a lot of local real estate investment groups in San Diego. I just spoke actually this week, and they're finding a wonderful niche there. If you can find a problem property and you know how to fix it and you know how to bring that property up to, you know, standard and keep it at an affordable level, because you can't build a new house and keep it affordable, but you might be able to buy an old ugly one and fix it, make it nice. And so that's an opportunity, but that takes work and knowledge. You need to study it, but you know, that could be an opportunity. And another thing that we're helping people in California do who really want to get into real estate and they really understand the power of owning real estate and the power of leverage, being able to borrow money to acquire an asset that, you know, that you own, even though the bank put up the money. So people want to take advantage of that. We help them do that elsewhere. Like if you want to live in paradise, you want to live in San Diego, but maybe you can't afford to own a home, maybe you can just rent in San Diego and own a home, maybe in Dallas where there's tremendous demand for housing, or in Florida where so many retirees are moving but not necessarily able to afford a home. So there's options for getting into the real estate market without actually living in the property.
Okay. Let's talk about the home ownership versus rental angle of this, because I know that you work with different people. As you said, you know, you have speaking events in San Diego and probably other areas as well. What are you seeing, you know, from your standpoint when it comes to the calculation that people are making as to, hey, is it worthwhile even buying a home at this point, or should I just be renting? I mean, what are the trends you're seeing there?
You just have to ask yourself, why am I buying? If you are starting a family and you want to raise your kids in a certain area and get them into a certain school district and you want to stay there and you have a steady job or you have your own business, if you're going to stay and you can find a property that makes sense, that you can afford to buy and that you can afford to live in and stay for a while, then by all means do it, because over time, that property will be worth more. But if you don't know if you're going to stay, or you know, you're maybe don't know where you want to settle down, I would rent. I would most certainly rent, because if you're forced to sell in the next couple of years, you could find yourself having trouble doing that, because I do believe the Fed is going to win this war. They're going to slow down the market. That's their intention. So I'm not saying that the property you buy today will be worth less in the future, but even if it's worth the same, and you buy, I'm just going to throw out a number because it's easy. But if you buy $1 million property, it's going to cost about 10% in fees to sell it. You know, it's about 5 to 6% in realtor fees and then closing costs and so forth. So you would lose money if the property didn't gain in value. So it just, you know, you don't want to be in and out unless you're improving the property. Like if you're doing the fix and flip thing, buying an older property, fixing up, increasing the value, then you might be able to make money. But otherwise, if you're not gonna stay in it, I would rent and I would buy an investment property, which maybe sounds overwhelming and scary, but it's not. That's what I teach people every day. Lenders are just as happy to give you a loan on investment property as for your residential, and the rate is still under 5%. And there's property managers who are experts at managing your property. You don't have to be. You just need someone who is. It's kind of like I'm not good at doing my taxes, so I'm not going to. I'm going to have someone else do it. Well, I'm also not good at fixing toilets, so I'm going to have someone else do that. So you can treat your real estate like a business and build wealth much more quickly through investment property, because you get to write everything off. A lot of the laws have changed with the new tax bill that make it less advantageous tax-wise to own a property, but very, very tax advantageous to own rental property. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can get to a point where you pay no tax through investment property, but your benefits of owning your primary are dwindling tax-wise. Mm.
Okay. So that's an important point. I just want to underscore that. So you said the new tax laws have made it less advantageous to own a home for yourself, but it makes it much more advantageous as an investment.
You can write everything off. You wouldn't believe what, I mean, if you go to my website, realwealthnetwork.com, we have module after module. It's free. So you can understand the tax benefits. Many people have thought, oh, I'm going to buy a house so I can get tax benefits. Well, it's not that great anymore. But if you buy investment property, nothing was taken away. You write off everything, every repair, you know, you write off your taxes, your insurance, your visits to the property, if you have a property manager, you write it all off. And literally there are ways that you can pay no tax doing it that way. So, hey, you know, we've got a real estate investor in office, so he didn't take that, advantage away.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a pretty obvious win there for him and others. Let's talk about some of the demographic trends that you're looking at, because I know that this is something that you've written about, looking at millennials and boomers as well. Millennials are the largest generation, so they are expected to be the biggest purchaser of homes, right? I mean, so they're moving into that age where they're going to start being the main contributor to the housing market. What are you seeing from millennials? What decisions are they making? What headwinds forces are they being faced with in the housing market? And, you know, what's your boots on the ground look there?
The millennials are getting a lot of pressure for not buying as quickly as their predecessors. Got to understand, this younger generation was not impressed with housing. They grew up at a time when people were losing their houses. Maybe their own family was forced to move. And so they didn't grow up with what I grew up with, which was, hey, you buy a house, you're going to make money. You know, why wouldn't you do that? So they have a different perspective. Plus, it's a different world. Every year, it's a different world. And it used to be you'd get a job and you'd stick with it and you didn't move much. But now you can live anywhere and still work. And you have so many. I mean, there's, you know, the digital nomad. I've got my own assistant. She's traveling the world for the last year and a half, working from different cafes all over the world, and she gets the job done. I'm totally happy as long as she gets the job done. I don't care where she is. So it is a different world, and millennials are different. But more importantly, the largest group of millennials is only in their mid-20s. So the average buying age for a home is 31. Now, it's looking like because the job market really only took off starting, you know, last year, the last 18 months or so, they haven't, you know, been in the game that long. So they're buying, their house buying pattern seems to be slowing down. It's a little delayed. It seems to be closer to 32, 33 years old. But the older millennials are buying just as they should be and just as prior generations. It's just that, you know, the millennials, I think it's like age 22, 23 or something up to 36. I'm probably somewhere around there. They, you know, these kids in their 20s, and the last thing they're thinking about is buying a home. They're just trying to get started in life. They're just trying to move off mom and dad's couch and out of the dorm room, right? You know, they're trying to get a job and get a savings, which is hard to do when they've got student loan debt and just starting out in life. It's when you get out of college, you don't necessarily demand the highest salary, right? You're just learning. So I think they're going to do just fine. And what that tells me is that in 5 to 7 years, we're going to have a massive housing boom, because when they are ready, and the bulk of these people who are, you know, like I said, around 26, 27, when they turn 32, 33, they're going to be forming families and they're going to be buying houses. So if we do have a recession in the next couple of years, meaning just a slowdown, I don't think there's going to be any kind of housing crash. Trust me, I think there's going to be a massive boom after that.
Okay. So interesting. Millennials are lagging in home ownership and they're more delayed in their purchases. But as they come of age in 5 to 7 years, that's when we might be looking at a pretty large housing boom again. So let's talk about the impacts that are coming. You touched upon this briefly a little bit earlier in terms of tax changes. Do you see those having any greater impacts just upon, you know, the coastal cities, the coastal markets versus the inlands? I mean, what's the sort of geographic distribution of the tax-related impacts as you see it?
You know, I really didn't think it was going to affect California that much, because it's been my opinion that if you're going to buy a home in California, you're a little crazy anyway. It's expensive, you know? You need a big down payment. And I just didn't think people would really be calculating the tax losses. You know, it's just kind of like, oh, icing on the cake, but they still want the cake. But we are seeing a slowdown in the higher end. And some people are saying, you know, maybe the vacation properties, they're not able to take deductions on those anymore. It, like I said, the Chinese investment is pulling back. So for whatever reason, we are seeing a slowdown. And like I said, builders are bringing more product online in the higher end. So, you know, people, yeah, there is an effect in the higher end in California. Is it from taxes? I don't think so. I mean, the people I know buying real estate, they're just not going to worry about not getting a $10,000 deduction or whatever they were getting. You know, it's so expensive still to live in that property. But I talked to other agents and they do think that it has something to do with it. So I don't know. We'll find out more and more. People are just starting to realize the impact of the tax bill, and it's still being defined. So we won't really know probably until next year.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, you know, cost benefit. It sounds like maybe the benefits are exceeding the costs for real estate owners, of people that are owning properties and renting them out. Because as you said, that's where a lot of the benefits have accrued. So I guess that's where people really should be focusing on, where most of the impacts are going to be concentrated, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, if I were going to buy a second home and I couldn't get the tax deductions on that second home, I would turn it into an Airbnb, get all the write-offs, and still get to use it as a vacation home. So yeah, there's just different ways that people are taking advantage of the tax law. But trust me, if you've got the right CPA, they're going to tell you exactly what to buy and how to structure things to get the best benefit. And they, you know, you've got the 20% deduction when you open and when you form an LLC, and most people put their investment property in an LLC. So even further tax deductions and depreciation. Oh my gosh, you can depreciate so much, even the furnishings, if you have an Airbnb. So yes, people should talk to a good CPA. We have a whole list on our website of CPAs who really understand the new tax law and how it affects housing, and how you can really get to a point like our president, where he famously said on stage when he said, "Oh, well, we know you don't pay taxes," and he said, "That makes me smart." you can be just like him if you want to be. Just kidding. I know not everybody wants to be, but at least tax-wise.
Correct. Yeah, you can do it legally.
Yes.
Okay, so to wrap things up, you know, it sounds like from what you said, you're expecting that this is more of a temporary slowdown. A lot of it depends, again, on how fast the Fed tightens. You're not looking at anything like what we saw in 2005 with the bubble bursting. Then none of this, we don't see the same level of imbalances there. And again, you know, I mean, for real estate investors that, or people that are thinking of moving into using real estate as an investment vehicle for rental income, that's probably where most of the benefits are. And the downsides from the tax law are still, we're still going to have to see how those play out, but it looks like those are somewhat muted at this point. So with that said, can you tell us a little bit more about Real Wealth Network and some of the services that you provide?
Sure. Real Wealth Network is an investor organization where we give a tremendous amount of education that people just don't know where to get elsewhere. So we make deals with CPAs and attorneys and say, "Hey, we'll refer people to you if you give us a bunch of free information." And so I interview them on my podcast, The Real Wealth Show. And I also have them come out to events and do webinars, giving lots of free information. Then we also understand that, you know, it makes more sense to invest where jobs are going, where population is going, and where it's still affordable. And those areas may not be in your neighborhood, which means you've got to become really good at buying property that you can't drive by. So we teach that. We also have teams nationwide who will help our members find the property, oversee the renovation of it, and screen for tenants. They're licensed property managers and can manage the property ongoing, so that it's kind of quote unquote turnkey for an investor out of state. At our events, we bring out people from Ohio and Texas and Florida and Georgia, some of these states where the migration is showing the migration pattern heading that direction.
All right. Well, Kathy, I want to thank you for coming on to Financial Sense NewsHour and speaking with us. Once again, if you want to find out more, you can go to realwealthnetwork.com or even search her podcast and listen to Kathy more there. Kathy, it was a pleasure. We look forward to having you on again.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any
any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.